Welcome to the Chariot TechCast, episode number 110, our interview with Philly emerging tech speaker Chris Baglieri. I'm TechCast producer Becca Rufford. The Chariot TechCast is brought to you by Chariot Solutions. For help developing great software, whether it's in the cloud, native apps in iOS or Android, browser-based single-page apps in React or Angular, moving big data around, or even integrating IoT devices with your data collection services and sensors, Chariot's here to help. We provide project-based consulting, training, mentoring, and architectural evaluations to make your efforts shine. Visit us on the web at chariotsolutions.com. In this episode, host Ken Rimple talks to Chris Baglieri of Blackfin on the company's work in health research-related data science. He discusses how he and his team aids researchers who are attacking Parkinson's disease and other disorders. They've been doing the deep genetic research that has benefited cancer research over the past two decades. They talk about the challenges of dealing with research data, tools of the trade, and the impact this kind of research could have on brain-related disorders. Chris is a speaker at Philly Emerging Tech this year. Come see his talk entitled Understanding Parkinson's Disease Through Data Science. At the end of the podcast, we offer a discount code for registering as a TechCast listener. Now, on to the TechCast.
So, Chris Baglieri, welcome to the Chariot podcast.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for having me.
So, you're a speaker at Philly Emerging Tech. I really liked your abstract. So, I know that, you know, Parkinson's affects a lot of people. Obviously, the biggest name that everyone knows is Michael J. Fox, but, you know, if you have anybody over the age of 60, like you're saying in here, there's probably a chance that you have been touched by it. I know my mother-in-law suffers from it. So, it's one of those diseases that's been, you know, around for a long time. We just haven't solved the treatments. Tell me a little bit first, before we get into the actual topic of you know, the Parkinson's research you guys are doing, tell me a little bit about yourself. Like, how did you get into software engineering? And I see you're focusing on data sciences and data processing. So what made you kind of go down that road?
Yeah, so let's see. So I'll tell a story in a brief minute here. So I started early in my career just straight up software engineering and just really enjoyed building just large distributed systems. And at that time, I was in Boston. And so that was, I'm going to date myself here, but that was roughly 20 years ago. And around that time, Boston has a very heavy life sciences and healthcare sector. And at the time, the Human Genome Project was in full swing. And so when I was in Boston, I really got to taste the overlap of tech, engineering, data science, and just scientific data, and being able to really start to navigate these massive sets of information, particularly on the genomic side of things. So, you know, you were sequencing genomes, and, you know, it's just that mountain of data, and being able to try to make sense of it was very appealing to me. And so it was about that time where I really just started becoming very interested in that space. And so I was working full-time, but I felt like I didn't have the full vocabulary of molecular biology. And, you know, it's one of those domains where there is a little bit of a barrier to entry, just because it's hard to kind of understand and decipher the language around it. And so I started studying it and really just getting into it, and ended up doing a degree while I was working in bioinformatics. And so bioinformatics is, you took molecular biology, mathematics and statistics, and engineering, and just slammed them all together, out would fall out bioinformatics. And so it's super nerdy, but I love it. And so from that point on, I really just loved basically building platforms and wielding software in healthcare and life sciences settings. I just find it very enjoyable. I know you sort of mentioned early on about, you know, having disease touch the people around you. And so being able to throw zeros and ones at a problem like that is pretty rewarding. And so, you know, over those last 20 years, with a few exceptions where I've dipped my toes in the consumer applications and platforms, a lot of my time has been spent either at early stage healthcare or scientific companies. And I spent time in big pharma. I spent time at, you know, health tech startups where it was like one or two people in a room and building out patient engagement platforms. And so, most recently, over the last 3 or 4 years, I've been at Blackfin. And so my role here is the SVP of engineering. And so I've been here, we started a bunch of years ago, we were roughly five, around 30 now. It's, you know, we're a very data science focused company, and in a lot of ways, I'd say we're less a software company, almost more of a scientific data company. This happens to be really freaking good at software.
Are you mostly focusing on the healthcare area, or are you guys spread across a number of different areas?
Typically right now, we're focusing, I would say it's less about like a healthcare industry or the scientific industry. In general, our lens is a little bit different. We are focusing on neurology and neurodegenerative disorders. And so if I could talk to this a little bit analogously. So if you think of cancer and oncology, you know, if you go back 20 years ago, the entire world of cancer really began to change its shape when we started to understand some of the mechanisms of how cancer works, right? And that was largely data-driven, going back to my story about, you know, the Human Genome Project. You know, once we sort of had an understanding of the genetic mechanisms of cancer, that's when this whole explosion of software and tools and new therapies and new drugs all started to emerge. And that's been a 20-year endeavor. And not that cancer's solved, we're far from solving it. But, you know, if you catch cancer, certain kinds of cancers early, there are medications, albeit very toxic and hard to take. But there's a lot, you know, a lot at your disposal that you as a patient have, you know, ways to help sort through that and work through the disease. And a lot of tools that computational scientists and bench scientists can use to help learn more and uncover therapies. Neurology and neuroscience is effectively where cancer was 20 years ago. It is, we don't understand the mechanism of Parkinson's disease or dementia or Huntington's. It's just like disease-modifying therapies. I mean, you could take drugs that help reduce some of the symptoms of it or, you know, put you in a better state for a longer period of time, but you can't, there's no like therapy that you could take to cure Parkinson's or to cure Huntington's. And so where we are now with neurology is that we're just at a point where the volume of data is massive. The complexity of data is tough. The diversity of data types that we're dealing in neurology is not just genomics. And so, you know, you're getting into like imaging data and time series data. So, you know, like EEG, the mesh you wear over your head, recording all of that brain activity. And so just to understand what the hell is going on in these diseases, I need to be able to integrate and sync an image with a ton of time series data, with genomics data, with clinical data, you know, coming from large warehousey kinds of systems. And it's just a raw data problem, and it's hard.
Yeah, it's kind of like it's investigative computer science, essentially. You're digging and trying to put things together and match and see patterns and trends.
Yeah, exactly. And it's non-trivial. And I mean, You're also, particularly in the healthcare world, and you know, some of these systems are, you know, they're dinosaurs. And so you're constantly like having to, you know, to integrate with it with an EMR, electronic medical record system. You want to bang your head against the wall sometimes. And then, you know, on the other hand, it's like, I have these sophisticated machine learning tools and all these rich, immense frameworks I could do to throw at this data. But the lift to get that data just to a state where I could do that is very, very high. And so some of my colleagues who are PhDs in this stuff, I mean, they spend quite literally 80% of their PhD time is actually spent on all the plumbing and the you know, laborious data stuff. And then 20% on actually like the important science. And so, you know, what we're trying to do at Blackbin is we want to flip that around. We recognize that software is not going to solve all your problems, but to spend 80% of your time doing that is just a complete waste of energy. And we want to flip it around. We want to say, you know, we'll give you smart tools and a smart platform, almost like a BI tool, but really focused on a very specific kind of data. We want to flip that. So we'll give you the means to handle all these different data types, to track and capture all of the knowledge around those data types so that 80% gets collapsed to 10 or 20% of your investment of energy. And then now you have 80 or 90% to ask questions and to generate hypotheses and do the actual science that's going to help. And so that's really where we're focused here. And the team here really is built out to do that. And so 2/3 or 3/4 of the folks here are really are software engineers, data engineers, and data scientists. And those individuals are paired with neuroscientists, neurologists, clinicians, and other folks. And so it is truly multidisciplinary, which is one of the things I love most about it. It's great.
And how long have you been at Blackfin? You said you've been there for a while, right?
Yeah, I've been here for about 3.5 years. So it's spun out of Penn. And so there are 4 co-founders, and I think each of the breeds of each of the co-founders is pretty illustrative of kind of where the company's come from. So Amanda, she's our president. Her background is, she's in biotech. So she started off doing business development in biotech, and she has immense business savviness and a very deep background in just broad life sciences. And so she had a successful exit or two out west in biotech, and then she wanted to get closer to a patient. And so, like any insane person, she decided to go to med school at that time and really pick up this wealth of clinical knowledge. And so she started practicing medicine, and ultimately, after a bit of moving around the country, she landed at Penn. And so she's one of the co-founders. The other three co-founders, Jost Wagner, he's a PhD in biomedical engineering. And so his area of expertise is really on in neuroscience, machine learning, and just devices. So, you know, implantable devices in the brain that just absorb and track and do interesting things with that data. There's Zach Ives. He's another co-founder. He's still at Penn. Amanda and Jost are here working full-time. Zach is a computer scientist, and his area of expertise is data integration. And then there's Brian Litt, PhD, and he is an epileptologist. And so he really understands epilepsy. And so where they started off, the seeds of our platform is really around it's just capturing and tracking mostly time series and EEG data. And so that spun out of Penn a bunch of years ago, and that's more or less when I joined. And so at that time, it was roughly a team of five. And so really the first year of my existence here, well, one of the things I love about my job is that every 6 months it radically changes. And so the first year of my existence here, you know, the first 6 months I was straight up engineer. And so what we did was we took the seeds of the platform, which were nurtured in an academic setting, and we fundamentally rebuilt a lot of that infrastructure so that it could scale more appropriately and have the general accessibility and right bones to grow. And so that was the first 6 months of my existence here. And then the next year after that was really around building up the team. And so I've been fortunate to be in the Philadelphia ecosystem for a while. And so one of the things I really love about it is that it's a very small and tight-knit community. And so having spent a bunch of years at other startups in the city, I got to reach out to all my favorite engineers and designers who've just had such an impression over the years here and you know, have them join Blackfin. And so we grew the team pretty substantially, pretty quickly. And so once we had that core team in place, we could really start to build things out. And we use a really fun stack. So if I can nerd out for a second there. So
yeah, that's what we're probably going to be most interested in is techies, right? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's fun. And so the entire platform, it's all Amazon. So we use an overwhelming amount of AWS services. And so storage-wise, we use all the ones you would expect, RDS and S3. We're pretty big consumers of Neptune as well. They're a more recent graph database. We were part of their launch into JIN that, which was fun. So we use Neptune quite a bit. And middleware, we're all, at least on the platform side, Scala, which is great. This has been, I've used Scala over the years, but this has been my first real meaty Scala endeavor. And that's been a real fun adventure. And so on the data science side, our middleware is more or less all Python, which is pretty standard. We use a bit of Rust too. This has been my first time using Rust, and we use Rust for, you know, there's our core platform. There's a bunch of web apps built on top of it. And then we have an SDK or client tool that runs headless on OS X, Windows, and Nix environments. And so that's actually written in Rust. And so that was my first foray into Rust, which is pretty neat. You know, we're very much right tool for the right job kind of people here. And so that's more or less our middleware. And then client side, it's just a metric ton of JavaScript, which we love. Yeah, so it's a pretty diverse team. You know, people are for the most part broad and generalist. And then we have folks who have lots of deep expertise building data platforms, primarily outside of the scientific space. But, you know, the funny thing is that, you know, if you zoom out just a little bit, it's all data. And so a lot of things in open source projects that have been used in other industries are very applicable here. You just need to know how to plug them in and use them appropriately.
Right. And I mean, you know, a lot of people think the first thing they think of when they think about big data is they think about advertising.
Right.
You know, yeah. So, you know, I remember when we were first looking at this and bringing people in for ET a number of years ago, one of our keynoters, I think her quote was something along the lines of, "I've seen the brightest minds of my generation," you know, the Ginsburg quote, But, you know, basically at the service of building clickable ads targeted to people, you know.
I know.
So this is a nice alternative to that.
I'm very lucky to do what I do. And I am very grateful for that. And, you know, we host speaker sessions here. Like just yesterday, we had a doctor from Penn and just talk about his, you know, his patients that have Parkinson's disease. Just to be able to sit here and like be a part of that is just, it's really rewarding. And so, you know, if I have my way, for the rest of my career, I really want to work on and try to solve problems that are really worth solving. At the end of the day, work is work. Sometimes you just have to slog through stuff. And so if I could slog through something and attach some human meaning to that, that reward is still there. So I keep that at high on my list. And so, you know, it's interesting. So when you talk about big data, you know, a lot of times the data that we often deal with, it's sort of big in two dimensions. So there's volume, sure. But the scientific data is noisy. So like if you're dealing with transactional data, you know, from like a commerce system, it's more or less shaped the same. There's a ton of it. And so that is one problem. But it's shaped more or less the same. You know, when I'm dealing with scientific data, you know, and my big data are quadrants of an image or slices of time series or, you know, a bunch of ACTs and Gs and, you know, it's hard because the volume of data is not the only dimension that you have to deal with, but it's also the diversity dimension, which is challenging. And so, you know, the data challenges that we deal with here, there's many different facets to it.
Yeah, I'm sure filtering and transforming and reducing noise and, you know, extracting it out, that's a hard problem to solve, you know?
Yeah, it is. It's hard. I mean, and, you know, it's hard. And sometimes I think that the other thing that's a bit challenging is that oftentimes you don't know the questions you want to ask of it, you know, right up front. And so, you know, we do sort of take an approach where we try to store things in a manner that is a little bit abstract and gives us flex on the other end. So if I want to ask a question, we don't want the way we store and handle that data to be prohibitive of asking that question. So we want to enable the ability to ask that question. You're going to learn something about it. And then we need the ability to store what you learn so that you can ask another question and ask another question. And so, a lot of our energy is really spent around optimizing how we store this stuff so that it remains really accessible because you just don't fundamentally know how it's going to be used. I mean, science advances, you learn more, and then you want to ask a whole bunch of other questions of it. And so that adds a layer of complexity for sure.
So there's one thing you were mentioning in your talk briefly in the abstract was, you know, data being locked in silos. And obviously there's that, if you get access to the silo, then you're converting it into a format you can ingest and work with. But how challenging is it to get enough data to do the science against for this? Because I know that there are things like when different companies decoded different genomes, they locked them up and put them behind patents. And
it's tough. There's a lot of that. And so there's typically three access levels for data set. There's publicly available data. Mm-hmm. There, I would call private data, right? As a company, you know, I have data. I'm not just going to release that. That's sort of my IPs and that data itself. Yeah. And then there's what I would say, you know, partially accessible data. And but the partially accessible, you know, just to put a little clarity around that, a lot of it is that the data is publicly available, but you have to have a relationship just to more or less get access to it or a partnership in place. And so one of the things that, you know, we view ourselves as this company of triads, right? We have a platform, which is pretty wide and it can do a lot of different things, but we have a pool of data, a data ecosystem or data lake that we are building. And that data ecosystem is driven by the network and people that we have. And so we have immense reach to do that. And so, and having said all that, just the list in these data sets, it's pretty varied. So, you know, I'm going to talk a little bit about this data set at Michael J. Fox called the PPMI data set. And this is a study that, PPMI stands for the Parkinson's Progression Markers Initiative. And so this is a data set that's been around for nearly a decade, has close to a little bit shy of 1,000 patients. And all those patients, it's a long longitudinal study. So these are patients that have been tracked over the years, all kinds of data in there from sequencing data to imaging data to like biospecimen data to tabular data. They're starting to collect Verily watch data. Like there's just tons of stuff in there. But what's crazy is that you would think for a data set that's been around for so long that the barrier of entry would be reasonable. And the truth is it's not. You know, we took that, and one, just to get access to it is challenging. You don't have programmatic access. it's even hard just to click a button and download the whole thing. You almost have to go through it file by file, which is kind of crazy.
Wow.
So it's just, you know, just getting the data set down. It's like, okay, great. Step one, hurdle accomplished. Let's get to the next hurdle. Now it's like, imagine like me giving you my laptop and saying, okay, here you go, Ken, figure it out.
Yeah.
It's like, well, you have to bring order to it. It's like, and that is another whole other barrier of entry. And so you bring order to that chaos. It's like, okay, great. That's the next level. Now let's get to the point where it's like, all right, what data is in here? It's like, oh, well, don't you know it's these patients? And like, then there's noise. What happened to this patient? They disappeared for 4 years and then they came back. And so then there's a whole other level of like, let's put a table of contents, so to speak, over this data. Let's give you an index so you could sort through it and query it a little bit more effectively. And so the lift around these data sets is substantial. And then when you want to take data set A and do some interesting work in the context of data set B, and then you overlap the two, well, that complexity then hockey sticks. And so it's the lift on these is pretty substantial, but the output and the importance of it is really tremendous. And so the amount of data that you need is surprisingly not massive. You know, if what you're doing is asking questions of it, you don't need hundreds and, you know, millions of patients to ask these questions. You might need a few thousand.
Yeah, statistically.
Statistically, exactly. You know, it really depends on what you're looking at. And so the N is quite different.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it's just the barrier to entry is high.
Just to get to identify what they are and how they categorize and which ones to put through and how much of a sample to take based on how much noise there is and everything else.
Precisely. And, you know, it's, you know, where you could start to, what I really like about this space is like, it's going to take us some time to get there, but this is where like things like machine learning and data science, in my opinion, can have a massive impact, right? So what I love about like the consumer space is, you know, the models that are built now to, I could throw an image in on their end. I could say, hey, that's a green sweater and that's in the corner and it's from J. Crew. Right. That's insane. And so I want to be able to do that with like, give me a tissue sample. I want to throw that in and I want to have models that say, oh, that tissue sample looks like someone that might have disease X. And then I want to say, oh, if I have that output from that model and I want to compare it with this output from this genetics model, it's like, what does the combination of those two things look like? And what does that give me? And so, you know, part of what we're doing is trying to put data into a state where I could begin to use modern tools to do interesting things with it.
And are you using things like, you mentioned Scala and Python, so are you using things like Hadoop and Spark and things like that as well?
Day-to-day, not yet, but we do a lot of our analysis. Let's just say the core DNA and how we're storing that. A lot of it is in Parquet. And so when it comes time to chucking that into Spark and you know, doing larger scale queries, that's certainly the path we'd go down. Absolutely.
Okay, cool. So the talk again is going to cover this. So give us a quick thumbnail sketch of what you're going to do in the talk.
Yeah, so what I was thinking was, one, I think the world that I exist in, I think, is foreign to a lot of just engineers and understanding, like, this is what data looks like in this world. And what I really want to illustrate is just the messiness of it, the diversity of data, and that just the barrier of entry is hard and requires a lot of data science and just smart engineering. So I want to start there. Use the PPMI dataset as a good backdrop to sort of show like this is what a large study looks like, and you know, talk about the work that we've done to take down that dataset, create order out of that chaos, and to show some interesting things we've built on top of it. Once you have that order, and so we've built some web applications that help model how Parkinson's disease progresses as a disease, and you know, we've given this to the Fox Foundation and stakeholders and they can now play with their data in a sense that it makes them much more interactive and much more alive. And so just to show the progression from raw, messy data, smart engineering, and really nerd out on the kind of tools that we use and some of the fun things that we've done with that data. There's a lot of cool graph theory stuff that we've had to throw at it, which has been fun. And then on that infrastructure, just show the kinds of things that we've been able to build, some of the visualizations and what those visualizations and tools have empowered scientists on the other end to begin to do. And, you know, just show from a grand scheme of things how we want to replicate this across many, many different data sets so that we really can begin to build what I would consider would be the gold premier standard for example, Parkinson's disease data. And then I want to do that for Huntington's disease. And then I want to do that for dementia and so on and so forth, just to show that evolution brick by brick. Actually, this is a really fun anecdote. I might just add this. One of the things we did early on, we were figuring ourselves out a little bit. We started heavily on the medical device side, And so one of the more neat things I got to do was there was these implantable devices. We did some work with a large medical device company that they were evaluating medical devices that were implanted in dogs' brains that were having seizures. And so they had these deep brain stimulation devices, these DBS devices that were recording that data. And so working with them, we're like, we really want to build a closed loop system where I could pull that data in directly from our brain, pipe it into our platform in real time, see it, have analytics on the back end, change some of the parameters of the device, and then send it back. And so that was pretty amazing to me. I was like, oh my God, I'm watching real brain data come in to software. And at the end of the day, it was like using things that we've all used in other high volume transactional systems. I just got to throw brain data at it, which is pretty awesome.
It's crazy. Yeah.
It's so crazy. It's just even talking about it again is nuts. And so I get to do all sorts of fun things like that here, which is mind-blowing.
Awesome. Okay, great. So, Chris, we'll see you at ETE, and thanks so much for being on the podcast.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Many thanks again to Chris Baglieri for being our guest on the podcast and for speaking at Philly ETE. Again, his talk is Understanding Parkinson's Disease Through Data Science. Look him up at the conference and let him know you heard about the talk via our podcast. You can also find out how to reach him at www.chrisbaglieri.com. The TechCast is also sponsored by Manning Publications. Chariot and Manning go way back. Many of our Philly Emerging Tech speakers are Manning authors, and several charioteers have reviewed Manning books for technical accuracy. Their In Action series is a great way to level up quickly in any given technology. That's why Manning has teamed up with Chariot to offer a discount code to TechCast listeners. Simply check out with the code PODCHARIOT19, that's PODCHARIOT, and the number 19, all lowercase, and you'll get a whopping 40% off your next purchase. That discount is good for all TechCast listeners. For feedback on the TechCast, you can tweet us at TechCast or email us at techcastfeedback@chariotsolutions.com. You can also comment on each episode on its show notes page. Our list of episodes is available at chariotsolutions.com/techcast, where you can also subscribe to the podcast via your favorite RSS reader. We're also available on iTunes. Please post a comment there to support the show. And that's it for this TechCast, hosted by Ken Rimple and produced by me, Becca Reffert. Until next time.